Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
Welcome to another episode of Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Sean Hyken of The Athletic. With me, as always, Cody Westerlund of 670 The Score. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audio Boom, TuneIn, Google Play, anywhere else that you can find podcasts. Make sure you subscribe, leave us a five-star review, tell all your friends to subscribe, and check out the other podcasts in the Locked On Podcast Network as well. You can find us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook at Locked On Bulls. And if your company is interested in advertising to men between the ages of 18 and 54, then your company should be advertising with us right here on our show. Our audience is 95% male, and 78% of our audience is between the ages of 18 and 44. Recent surveys have shown that podcast listeners are 65% more willing to consider purchasing products they learned about from podcasts, and 60%, given equal price and quality, prefer to purchase from companies that are advertising on their favorite podcast. Our rates are reasonable, so make sure you email us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com with any inquiries. So, Cody, I'm back. We're in the studio. I've got this new bobblehead in the studio of Andre Iguodala swinging a golf club and wearing a virtual reality headset.
It was a terrific West Coast road trip for you.
Yeah.
The Bulls went 1-1, beat the Kings in a fun, entertaining game, lost the Warriors in big fashion. And you got an Andre Iguodala bobblehead. Looks like he's using a driver there, from everything
I can tell. Well, he's got the whole golf bag with him.
Whole golf bag, but he only has four clubs in the bag. This is what happens, I guess, Sean, when you go to Oracle Arena, you find mementos.
Well, he's wearing, and he's holding a golf club. He's wearing a full Warriors uniform, swinging a golf club, wearing a virtual reality headset. I have a friend that works for the Warriors, and they did this as a bobblehead giveaway, like a month ago, and I just had her hold me one.
This is the future, right? Like, out there on the links, enjoying nature, but with the virtual reality.
Well, the NBA is like going all in on the virtual reality and like gaming stuff. Did you see the announcement today that the NBA is starting a 2K esports?
Yeah, esports. If I ever get fired from my job or like the podcast gets out of control or something, like I'm gonna sign up for that and become a professional gamer and just play with Jimmy Butler and the Bulls, you know what I mean? Or whoever they trade Jimmy Butler for the next era of people for the Bulls. But, of course, West Coast road trip. What were your takeaways, Sean? The Bulls are now 26-27. Still solo, 7th in the East. A couple games clear in the playoff picture. Should note that the Bucks lost Jabari Parker to an ACL tear.
That sucks. That just sucks. It's the same knee he tore a couple years ago.
Second time in three seasons. So, as it pertains to the Bulls, we hope Jabari has a speedy recovery, but we don't expect the Bucks to be in the playoff picture in the same way we did a week ago. How do you feel about the Bulls right here? You were out there. What was the vibe out on the West Coast, particularly after the Warriors lost when they went down by 31 with no Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade?
Well, you're not going to believe this, but without Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade and playing against the Warriors at full strength, the Bulls lost by 31 points. I know that's a shock that the shorthanded Bulls without their two best players couldn't hang with the best team in the league.
I was most shocked that the Bulls couldn't keep up in the three-point shooting department.
No, I know. The Bulls are such a noted three-point shooting team that, you know, you would have thought they could have hung with Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant.
Their attitude afterward? Were the Bulls just one of those you move on from?
I think
you kind of know what happens or what?
I think that's what it was. Nobody seemed like they were too... Like there have been other nights, when they lost to the Bucks a couple times in December, for example, we were just in there in the locker room and they were just, like, shell-shocked and they just seemed despondent. After they lost to the Warriors, I think the vibe was kind of like, okay, we didn't have our two best players. We were playing the best team in the league. What do you want?
Yeah, and I didn't think there were any grand takeaways from the loss to the Warriors.
Paul Zipser actually played pretty good defense on Kevin Durant for the first quarter shift.
And then he got ankle tendonitis and had to leave. Update from Bulls practice Thursday was that Zipser did not participate in their scrimmage and such. She's unclear for Friday night in Phoenix for the Bulls. I thought the takeaway is, like, the only thing I watched for in that game, you know, like, once you know it's out of hand, is are any of the young players who looks like they belong? out there. You know what I mean? I thought Chris Felicio came back, had the lower leg strain, came back a couple days sooner than expected. I thought he looked like he belonged out there, just the way he moved and like was in the right position. I know he had the alley-oop dunk. He does it about once a game now.
Yeah.
It seems like. But he also moved well, rebounded, like didn't seem out of place. I know I'm a Jaren Grant guy, but I thought he attacked the rim well the one play.
He was fine.
When he tried to end JaVale McGee's career with a dunk or whatnot. Hit a couple jump shots. I didn't think he looked out of place defensively. The rest of the Bulls' young guys were just awful.
Doug was terrible. Denzel was terrible.
Michael Carter-Williams didn't impress whatsoever at all. I had good, coming off two really good offensive games against Houston and Sacramento, and then really did nothing. So, like, that's, I guess that's maybe the small takeaway, like, who belongs out there. But, I mean, right now, the A storyline on the Bulls, a subplot that's important, is probably Doug McDermott, because he's not performing well.
No.
In the month of February, I know it's only four games, but he's averaging 7.5 points. He has 7 points combined in his last two games. Only scored 4 points against the Warriors on a night Butler and Wade were out. Two leading scorers, about 43, 44 points a game between those two. Like, Doug McDermott has to do more. We know he was beaten defensively against the Warriors. What's his attitude? Can he turn it around? What do the Bulls do with him, Sean?
I mean, it's a weird... It's hard to get a read on, because I was talking to him a little bit after the game, but we were just kind of joking around about something else. He didn't seem like he was too down on himself, or at least he wasn't showing it while media was in the locker room. But... So Fred Hoiberg was asked about it afterwards, and he just gave the most incredible non-answer. Like, he was just living up to his name as the mayor. He was just, it was just a total non-answer. It had nothing to do with Doug McDermott. It was, what do you say, it was 182 words?
It was 182 words, and the question was asked whether Doug's defensive struggles affect his offensive game. 182 words, never mentioned Doug by name. Immediately started talking about the need to practice the next day, get to work, get Jimmy Butler back, get Dwayne Wade back, and how Golden State was mad coming off some controversy.
It was like...
Even if it was fake, between Draymond Green and Kevin Durant, that the Warriors were mad and Steve Kerr had been kicked out recently against the Kings and stuff.
Seeing it in person was just I was like, there was one of the national writers who has not really been around the Bulls much. Like, while Fred was giving this answer, like, he and I were looking at each other, it was just like, this is, like, and I was just like, yeah, this is what this is. Like, and this was the most pure distillation of the Fred Hoiberg experience in terms of covering him that is going to exist. This is like, did you ever read Keith Richards' autobiography?
I did not.
He was talking about how the reason he didn't die from all the drugs he did in the 70s was because he was using, like, the pure medical-grade cocaine. This answer of Fred Hoiberg was, like, the Fred Hoiberg non-answer equivalent of, like, the purest medical-grade, like...
He's keeping his job because he's so good at not offending a single person in the organization, basically... At this point, I didn't expect the podcast. I think that's our first cocaine reference on the podcast. I think we had a weed reference with Larry Sanders one time, maybe, I think. But that's the first cocaine reference, because, of course...
We're just trying to cover our bases here.
Yeah, that's true. But, like, yeah, but that's the thing, too. The way Fred answers those questions, okay? The Bulls, I know they don't care about what they call the outside noise a lot.
Right.
They care more than they let on publicly. We can confirm that for you just from being around the team for several seasons. But any complaint they might have, anything they want to register with you that they don't like, they lose the right to complain when your head coach won't even address a question you ask about a player who's clearly struggling on one end of the floor, Doug McDermott. And I mean, two ends of the floor.
And it's not even. And it's not even like this is your... you know, star where the coach wants to trade lightly because he doesn't want to, like, offend this guy, because then this guy's going to ask for a trade and that's going to blow up their whole team. Like, I feel like he wouldn't... You could understand if he wanted to say, well, if he wanted to, like, let's say there was something that Jimmy Butler was doing badly and Fred was going to dance around that because you don't want to create attention with Jimmy Butler because that's your star. If Fred calls out Doug McDermott's defense, like what are the negative consequences of that going to be?
Yeah, nothing. And, like... I mean, you're not controlling the message. And look, if you don't care about the message, that's fine. But also don't go out complaining when people... As a writer, look, you have to write the truth. And if the team is not even going to acknowledge a truth, you have to write it on your own sometimes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And sometimes people go too far, that, like, metastasizes to other things. And then it gets into hairy, fuzzy situations. But, like, if you're not going to address the simplest things, I just think you lose the right to... to care about complaining about anything that is a bigger deal. You know what I mean? Yeah. So,
so Cody, you had a piece today on 670thescore.com that kind of laid out how you would go about laying out what the Bulls' long-term plan should be and fixing it. And it was a pretty interesting piece. I agreed with a lot of it, but I feel like that's something we should talk about.
It's some things we'd referenced on the podcast before, so I just realized we talked about it enough.
Make sure you go to 670thescore.com to read this piece.
And it's in my Twitter timeline as well, at Cody West.
I retweeted it. You can follow me, at Hyken.
And you can follow Locked On Bulls, at Locked On Bulls on Twitter as well. But the gist of this was, so everyone seems, I shouldn't say everyone, I would say a fair number of people seem to be in the hold on to Jimmy or trade Jimmy camp, like one or the other.
Right.
As if there's no gray area. And if anything, I've come to know that like sports is so often a gray area with everything. I'm not in either camp. I'm in the, if you want to blow it up and trade Jimmy, I'm okay. If you get 99 cents or a full dollar on the dollar for Jimmy Butler.
Right.
And I know we've referenced this before, but I think that's two young rotation players.
And those two Brooklyn
and
picks.
Two quality draft picks. Like, hey, two lottery picks would be good if one of them's top three and the other one's number 20. Like, I'm flexible here if a team wants to put a package together.
I'm a little bit less flexible. To me, it has to be the Celtics, and it has to be both of the Brooklyn picks and two of their young players.
Yeah. I'm but very like, much the, on the same. We're the kind point, of in the same.
The point being that if they're trading Jimmy Butler, they better be getting a lot back.
So my point here in writing this was I laid out, what, six or seven steps here about how we don't know if that offer's coming, but here's what you can do as the Bulls now to set up a future, whether it's with Jimmy Butler as your cornerstone and foundation, or if that offer comes out of nowhere and someone blows you away, you can still do these things and be well-positioned for a Jimmy trade later and just kind of coalesce everything together.
Sure.
Flip Taj Gibson for an asset before the February 23rd trade deadline, whether it's a late first-round pick or just a young rotation player.
That's something, and that's something that I think we've talked about a few times. I addressed it. I did a mailbag on The Athletic today, which I did to sort of kill time on my flight back to Chicago from the Bay Area. And we got, you know, some questions about it. The trade that I think makes the most sense in the world for Taj is trading him to Toronto and getting back Jared Solinger's $6 million expiring contract as salary filler plus one of their late first rounders. They have their own first rounder and the Clippers first rounder. It's going to be like if the season ended today, it would be like the Raptors pick would be number 21, the Clippers pick would be number 24. So the Jared Solinger expiring contract plus the more favorable of those two picks, I think that gets it done for the Bulls, and I think that's a good trade for the Raptors. Like, I think that's, if you can get a late first rounder for Taj Gibson, that's something to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, like, I don't know that the first rounder part's going to work out, but a team like the Raptors has a couple young pieces, I believe. Terrence Ross, Norman Powell, guys like that.
Well, as you pointed out in the piece, the Cavs just got, I mean, the Hawks just got a first-round pick for Kyle Korver, who's 36.
Like, certainly. So just that idea of any young player you can control and envision helping your rotation, maybe they're not a starter. Obviously, it's a lot to ask for someone that the other team's going to get 25 games out of.
Sure.
But if they can be a rotation piece, that's helpful. I put part ways with Rajon Rondo. Nothing against Rondo. As a person professionally, I think he's handled his demotion well. I thought it was great that he stood up for the youngsters after Butler and Wade criticized him. But he's averaging nearly 20 minutes a game still right now since he came back in his second role unit. And those are minutes that Grant, Carter Williams, and Valentine can have. And if Rondo's not going to be on your team either way next year, just part ways with him somehow. I don't expect a trade to happen. But
so you want him to just buy him out?
Yeah, buy him out.
See, I disagree with that. This was just purely selfishly. I've just found him. I've totally come around on him. I think
he's great.
I mean, he's delightful, and I really enjoy his presence. And I love how real he keeps it about the state of the team. So, I mean, okay, fine. From a purely team building, yes, like it would probably make sense for them to get rid of him. But you know, selfishly, no. We have less fun stories to write when he's not here.
There's a real basketball reason to keep him, and that's if you think his $14 million he's making this year could be trade salary filler, basically.
Over the offseason.
Right before the draft.
Right before the draft, but right before free agency. From the understanding that I have from talking to various people in the organization, they view Rondo in that way as a trade chip. Unless somebody actually offers them something of value for him at the deadline, I think he's going to be on the team at the end of the year, which I wouldn't have said 2 or 3 weeks ago.
I definitely wouldn't have said it. I know I think I tweeted it and might have written it that this would appear to accelerate his exit from Chicago. Still hasn't happened yet.
Sure.
There's lingering tension between Wade and Rondo. There's no doubt. They're professionals. They can handle it, but seems easier.
quick here, entertain any offer for Nico Mirotic, for Robin Lopez. Like, these are guys, Lopez has been pretty darn good for him this year as a really solid role player. But hey, if someone wants to, you want to go young, someone wants to give you something good, sure.
So what Mirotic, would you, what would
restricted
you,
free agency,
what
I
would
don't
be,
know.
What would be the baseline? I'm totally with you on Nico. I would even if you could get a second round pick for Nico, I would probably do that.
Would you, If you made up your mind that you're letting him walk in restricted free agency no matter the price.
If it's a good second round pick, if it's like 31 to 40, yeah. I think about that.
The Draymond Green.
The range. Draymond Green range, exactly. What would you consider fair value for Robin Lopez?
I don't know. I didn't really think about Robin Lopez deeply, to be honest. That's fair value.
Because like, I kind of feel
team
like...
with, like, if there's someone out there, a wing that can pair with Jimmy, who's, I mean, not to beat a dead horse here, but who's young and athletic, and you think plays well alongside Jimmy Butler, I wouldn't mind flipping Robin Lopez for that person. Like, again, I'm just spitballing here. I don't know who off the top of my head that would be. I haven't gone through the depth charts to see who needs a starting center.
So you're talking about more of a player type of thing than a pick for
Probably.
Because I almost feel like...
if you get a pick for Robin Lopez, because he has two more years left on his contract, I think you're edging towards a rebuild more, and then you're not matching up with a win in 2 years time frame even. You know what I mean?
So my thing with Robin is I feel like even if they're going to rebuild, unless they like get a really good offer for him, even if they're going to rebuild, I would almost think he's the kind of guy that's worth keeping around if just for the short term. Maybe you flip him next year at the deadline and he has a year and a half left on his deal. But I feel like, you know, he's young enough that he's 28. He's been pretty durable. He's been pretty productive. That's not somebody you should just flip to, you know, just to give away.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't expect him to be traded. I think he'll be on the team this year. I think he'll be
on
the
team. And he's also the kind of guy, like, and I wrote about this in my mailbag at The Athletic because somebody brought up a Robin Lopez trade, and that was one of the things that I addressed. But Hoiberg has been using Cristiano Felicio a lot more to close. And so far, Robin has not complained about that at all or seemed like he's upset about that at all because he kind of understands where he's at and where... And, you know, that Felicio is a guy that they really believe in. Let's say down the line Felicio earns a starting spot.
Yeah,
I feel like Robin
year from now might be better to
I
let
feel
Felicio
like,
grow more.
Right. I feel like Robin would handle that pretty well and he wouldn't be upset about it. Because I know he's been a starting center for a number of years, but he also like he's a known quantity around the league. People know how good he is. He doesn't have to worry about like hurting his
certainly, like,
earning power.
He's proved what he is and he's been durable. I believe he's the only Bull to play in every game so far this season. So yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, like, you can't be tied to anyone, married to anyone here in the position you are as the Bulls.
I think I absolutely agree with you. I don't think anybody's untouchable, and I think Jimmy's the closest thing to, like on one end of the spectrum there's Jimmy Butler, and the other end of the spectrum is, like, Rajon Rondo, who anybody offers literally anything of value. Like.
Yeah, certainly. Then play all these youngsters, let Taj and Rondo go, and then it's more playing time for Portis, Felicio. These guys, the whole point is just to gather more intel on them so you know what you have a little bit more, have a little bit more confidence heading into next year in these guys, know who might fit around Jimmy Butler better.
Uh-huh.
Don't sweat the losses, because every loss the Bulls take this year edges them up another pick or two higher probably in the draft. I shouldn't say every loss, but every few losses edges them up another pick or two.
Yeah.
It's a good thing. Solid draft from what I've read. We're not draft experts. We will have draft experts on leading up to June's draft. But I know it's really deep at point guards, like 5 or 6 deep point guards we're talking. And you could get one of those maybe at 12 or 13 in a way that you might not be able to, say, if you're the Bulls and you get the 7th seed in the East and get the 17th pick or something. So even though we know they don't want to tank, like, if you just move up a little higher in the draft, helpful. Make Jimmy Butler the full-time point guard.
I'm with you on that, 100%.
I know that's a huge responsibility and takes a lot out of an individual to have to initiate the offense and be the focal point offensively every single possession, create for others, and then still be asked a lot of times to guard the best player on the other end. Maybe you don't have Jimmy guarding the best player all the time on the other end, although you probably would have to with Dwayne Wade and Jaren Grant in your backcourt as well or whatever. But, like, I know that's a ton to ask, but, like, he does it really well in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
I like what it does getting another shooter on the floor. I mean, this sounds really simple, but when do you feel most confident about Bulls basketball? When the ball's in Jimmy Butler's hands and he's in a playmaking mode in which he and others are engaged, right?
The lineup that I like the most, honestly, is if you have Jimmy out there running the offense, and then you basically have Felicio as a center, as like the rim runner type of guy. And then you have like McDermott, Zipser, and Mirotić out there. There's three guys you can kick it out to on the perimeter.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a seems like an overload a little bit. I still like Dwayne Wade out there.
Sure. I mean, okay, so throw in whatever you want. Yeah.
Two shooters at least.
The point being, I like it better with Jimmy or Wade handling the ball than I do with those two guys out there with either MCW or Jaren or Rondo or whoever.
I hear where you're coming from there. But, I mean, again, what's the worst that happens? You have 25 games. Let's say they start doing this after the All-Star break when there's about 25 games left.
Right.
Or so.
And that's going to be after the deadline, too.
Deadline. We'll know what the roster looks like, obviously, after trade deadline. And you do this. What's the worst that happens? You realize it went really poorly, and Jimmy can't keep up on the defensive end, and Jimmy's too winded, and he just comes back to coach and says, hey, later, like, hey, let's just make me the point guard in the fourth quarter in the big moments.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, so you lose a few games you shouldn't. Like, nothing bad's going to happen out of this. But look what the Rockets did. I know this is not even like an apple to oranges comparison. It's like fruit to vegetable or something here. Like, I know James Harden doesn't play defense. And I know that the Rockets have better shooters around him. But in the same vein there a little bit, it's okay to experiment and see what happens and see if it works. And if it doesn't, okay. Throw it away. At least you're not wasting time next year trying to figure out it.
Right, and Jimmy Butler is so talented that even if they try this and it doesn't work, that he's good enough that if he's on the floor, they're going to have a chance to win these games even if this experiment doesn't work.
My last point.
Okay.
Make your basketball decisions based around Jimmy Butler. When you make a basketball decision, ask yourself, is this good for Jimmy? Because if it's good for Jimmy, he's your best player, he's a top 10 player, it's probably going to be really good for the organization. Probably going to help win basketball games. Signing Rajon Rondo and Dwayne Wade was not the best thing for Jimmy.
No.
Signing one or the other might have been fine. Signing both was not helpful. So far, I don't know if the Denzel Valentine pick is helpful for Jimmy or not yet.
Well, theoretically, Denzel was a really good shooter in college, so that was theoretically something that would have helped, but he has not been good.
Just not moving Jimmy to point guard yet, I don't think that's the best thing for him. Like, I think he should go there. He's expressed a willingness and a desire in the past to do it. Dating back again, it was some shade thrown at Derrick Rose, but I remember the game in Milwaukee at the end of the 2015-16 season where I think Rose might have been out with an injury and Jimmy played point guard most of the night. And he goes, it's not that hard and it's a lot of fun, basically. Like, that's what he said. Like, he likes it. He's open to it. But just everything you do, whether it's a playing rotation, making sure Jimmy has a couple shooters out there with him. Like, playing him with Dwayne Wade and Michael Carter-Williams, I don't think that's helpful for Jimmy. I like this Jaren Grant alongside him a little more, I know. I know you're a big Paul Zipser guy. I like that Paul Zipser brings a little bit more shooting. I still think, like, I know Jimmy and Doug are kind of boys. And, like, just because they're boys, they don't have to be on the court together. But I like the idea, theoretically, sometimes here, of Doug being on the court with Jimmy because Doug is a sharpshooter at his best when he's playing well, when he has confidence. I like that. Like, you're playing rotation, so make sure he's out there with guys that make the most sense. Like, right now, they've surrounded Rondo with the shooters on the second unit. Like, let Jimmy do that a little bit, you know? Like, that's okay, too. We can find a little bit more of a happy medium here sometimes. But whatever it is, playing rotations, offensive sets, the trades you make, whoever you're signing this summer, and we'll get to this later, there's names out there. I don't expect the Bulls to get any of the big ones in the form of Gordon Hayward, Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, or anything like that, obviously. We know Curry's going back.
Well, they're both, neither of them are going anywhere.
Yeah, they're not going anywhere. But, like, there's other guys, the next tier out there, that maybe it would make sense. When you're considering these guys, look at them, like, are these guys that can play with Jimmy Butler? And no matter what it is, just, you know, be aware of everything you say. Like, Fred Hoiberg never criticizes Jimmy Butler, but I also know Jimmy Butler can take a little heat. Like, he has literally said on record once or twice this year, I like controversy, it motivates me, I'm okay with it, I like being called out and challenged.
Well, dating back to last year when he said he wanted Hoiberg to coach them harder, I think he wouldn't mind it if Hoiberg said, oh, Jimmy is bad at this, he needs to do this better. I think Jimmy wants a coach that's willing to call him out. That's why everybody respected Tom Thibodeau so much, because he wasn't ever going soft on any of the stars and saying, hey, I'm not going to criticize, you know, what... You know, if Joakim Noah did something that Tom didn't like, he'd call him out for it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I just think that makes sense. Like, Jimmy's a big boy. Like, Jimmy goes out of his way to make sure everyone knows he's a big boy now. Yes. He's a star. And, like, he can handle it, you know? Think about this guy. He came up, he was one of the least heralded players at every level he played at before. Like, a JUCO guy, an afterthought. He was taken in by a different family when he was a teenager.
Right.
He goes to Marquette, and he's just a, like, third stringer, works his way, works his butt off, and becomes a great defender, and then moves into a bigger offensive role. Goes from not playing as a rookie to being top 10 guy in the NBA. Like, he's been challenged at every level. He's, and in Marquette, I know Jimmy spoke about how Buzz Williams would challenge him, send him motivational text messages early in the morning to basically get his butt out of bed and work. Like, that's in part the reason Jimmy Butler has his 5 a.m. workout regimen, because guys like Buzz Williams have pushed him. Like, he can handle that. And when you don't call him out, I think you enable him a little bit. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You do enable everyone a little bit when you don't kind of go hard at him. So, like, push the right buttons with Jimmy. Make the right basketball decisions with him, because you got a player. And you do all these things, build around Jimmy. I don't think the Bulls are winning a championship next year or the year after.
No.
They still need to sign a big name number two or sidekick in free agency.
Or really hit another draft pick.
Or really hit another draft pick and have him develop quickly to be a championship contender. But at least you're elevating, I think, yourself and putting your star player in a better position. And I think if you do all these things, you can pivot still and have some assets build up, some younger players maybe, by way of some of these moves. And the younger players you have, you know what to do with them or how they fit in to pieces that you might bring in. So if you do get the Godfather offer for Jimmy Butler and you hit go on it and you hit the reset button here, and blow your organization up from scratch and get a couple really young lottery picks, like a couple top 10 picks. Like, guys like Jaren Grant, you know, he can be our seventh man when we got these guys, you know.
Right.
Or Chris Felicio, with another year of development, more playing time, he can be our starting center if we have a point guard
like
this.
Markelle Fultz,
who can
whoever,
run the pick and roll really well. Like, then you know these things because you're not guessing. So take some of the guesswork out of it. Do these things. Boom. Not everything solved, but at least progress. I'm all about progress.
I think everything you said there is solid, and we kind of outlined what it is, but you know the reasoning that you actually go into in there is worthwhile. And you know, again, go to 670score.com. Make sure you read that piece. Check out 670score.com to read all Cody's work covering the Bulls. Check out The Athletic to read my work covering the Bulls.
Do we have any housekeeping left for Friday? Bulls in Phoenix against the Suns, who I believe 16-37, worst team in the Western Conference. They're abysmal. Eric Bledsoe, Devin Booker, really good at getting buckets. Really good young backcourt. Who knows?
Dragon Bender is a guy that I like, and he just had ankle surgery, so he's going to be out for a little bit.
Oh man, you're bringing the negativity there.
Marquise Chris has had a pretty good stretch here, though.
Game the Bulls should win, though. Jimmy Butler is expected to play after missing the last three games, right, with the right heel contusion.
Yeah.
He participated in the Bulls scrimmage at their Thursday practice out on the West Coast after they got blown out on Wednesday night. So, barring a setback, Jimmy in to play.
Right, and then I'm going to Minnesota over the weekend. I'm going to be there for the last game of the road trip on Sunday.
You're not there for the game or the road trip. You're there to see Tibbs.
I am.
Yeah, like, make sure everyone knows. It's not about the game. It's about the Tom Thibodeau experience.
I gotta go catch up with Tom.
Well, did you see they beat the Raptors? And I looked really hard for a story on this, but apparently the Minnesota writers didn't write about it. They were just tweeting about it. Tibbs was so furious and worked up after their three-point win against the Raptors, I believe Wednesday night, that like the fact that they won didn't matter to him. He was calling out Wiggins again, saying he had to do more, saying the team was not putting in any sort of defensive effort that was needed to take it to the next level. And I'm like, you just beat the Raptors. They're like, but the third best team in the East. I know the Raptors have struggled lately, been under 500.
Right, but that's still the Raptors. I mean, if you're a team like the Timberwolves, who's kind of in that middle to lower tier of the teams fighting to get into the playoffs in the West, beating a team like Toronto, you should be pretty happy about that. But Tom is such a process over results guy.
It's so true. It is. It's so good too. I mean, that had to be probably one of their best five wins of the year. Probably.
Absolutely. Well, and I think we know what the best win of the year was for them.
Whoa, the Bulls. 20 points. What's
21 points.
21-point leads mean nothing in the first or second quarter in the NBA. They only mean things when they're 27 points in late in the third quarter in Sacramento.
And you still
blow. And then it disintegrates to zero. That's when a lead means something. We know 25-point leads mean nothing now in the Super Bowl. 27-point leads sometimes mean something and sometimes don't mean anything. 3-1
leads mean nothing. 3-1 leads mean nothing in the NBA Finals. Speaking of where I was last night,
no lead is safe.
No lead is safe.
There's nothing commemorating the 3-1, right? Like I imagine that's like just a sin to bring it up.
Well, you know, they don't. But you know what they do have there. Kind of in that area above the media room, like in the corner.
The hole in the wall that...
The hole in the wall that Dirk punched. Yeah, they have that
it's
along...
It's framed. Isn't it framed?
It's like behind glass. Like the piece of drywall that he punched is behind glass, and then above it they have a We Believe, like a bright orange We Believe Warriors t-shirt.
Yeah, this dates back to what, 07 when he was MVP?
07, yeah, when they were
the... Steven Jackson team.
Yeah.
Beat him. Didn't Dirk sign it too? Didn't he sign it? Or maybe he signed something else.
I don't...
Like, Dirk's... The point of it is, Dirk's been the best sport ever about the hole he punched in the wall at Oracle Arena.
Dirk is just the best guy in the NBA. I hope he does TV when he retires, because he is so naturally funny and smart and awesome. And I just hope he plays and stays...
The best guy in the NBA, but number two in Sean's German power rankings behind Paul Zipser.
Absolutely. And Dirk... I talked to Dirk about Paul Zipser when the Mavericks were here a couple weeks ago, and he says he thinks Paul Zipser's good.
He should have said he's just lit. Said something like that. Like, he's the future. He's a real deal.
Yeah, Dirk, I think, is too old to really be saying stuff like that. I think that the word lit, I think, is like teenager.
That's slang. Probably
like,
true.
I think Dirk is self-aware enough. He's not going to try to be the cool dad and say the slang that the youth are using.
We're self-aware enough that we're going to take Friday off from the podcast. I think we'll have one. I don't know. You'll be in Minnesota.
I'll be in Minnesota. I'll probably do one from Minnesota with somebody.
That would be great. And we'll be back Monday, probably for certain, before... the Bulls play a couple home games to wrap it up before the All-Star break. But as always, follow me on Twitter at Cody Westerlund. Follow Sean at Hyken. We're on Twitter at Locked On Bulls. On Facebook, the same name, at LockedOnBulls@gmail.com. It's where you can get a hold of us via email for any questions you have, advertising inquiries. Always welcome. Most of all, please subscribe.
That's right. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audio Boom, TuneIn Radio, Google Play. Anywhere else that you can find podcasts, whatever your favorite podcast app is, just make sure you subscribe. Go on iTunes, leave us a 5-star review. Tell your friends to subscribe. Check out the other podcasts in the Locked On Podcast Network as well. Locked On NBA, Locked On NFL, Locked On Fantasy Basketball, Locked On Fantasy Football, Locked On NFL Draft. All 30 NBA teams, all 32 NFL teams. Whatever you're interested in, there's a Locked On podcast for it as far as the NBA and the NFL. So check any of those out, and thanks for listening. We'll be back with you soon.